So thank you for joining this morning, if you're on the West Coast, session on the Microsoft MVP Virtual Conference. This session will be about detecting facial expressions with Azure Machine Learning and Connect for Windows. Hello, my name is Dwight Goins, and the moderator will be Gian Santopaolo, and we're going to do our best to address your questions and take you around the world for facial expressions and Connect for Windows with machine learning. So let's get started. I have over 20 plus years experience developing applications for the enterprise. Some of you may have read some of my blogs, hopefully. Some of you may not. I am a .NET developer, and I've been working with various different applications, dealing with .NET integration apps with servers like BizTalk server and SharePoint server. And I've also been doing some desktop applications using WPF apps and Windows Forms, if you remember that technology. Today is going to be a slightly twist from my normal brand of development. We're going to be talking a little bit more about the Connect device and the Connect for Windows. So, what I'd like to talk about in this session are five reasons why you need to include Azure Machine Learning into your applications. And then we'll do a little spill on the new buzzword of Internet of Things, or IoT, and cloud-based devices. And then once you see how everything starts to fit together, you'll realize there's a lot of data floating around. So we'll talk about the need for processing the data. Then we'll go into machine learning and what to do once we process that data, how we use machine learning algorithms to infer patterns and information. Then we'll talk about the different approaches that machine learning offers and give you the pros and cons about them. Then we'll go into, as far as the developer is concerned, how you might implement some of those algorithms in your .NET applications or your Windows Store applications. And then we'll bounce into MAML, Microsoft Azure Machine Learning. And then we'll talk about the Connect and give you an overview about the Connect device and what the Connect for Windows Software Developer Kit gives you and how to incorporate that with Azure Machine Learning. We'll then spend a little bit more detail talking about the Connect face data, and then give you guys a chance to ask some questions and tell you where to go from here. So, five main reasons why you need to think about utilizing machine learning in your application today is very simple. Number one, if you ever have an app that has a bunch of data coming from many different places and you need to recognize patterns that are coming from these devices or patterns that are coming from data from any source or repository, that would be a good reason to think about utilizing various different algorithms in machine learning. What if you have an app that needs to try and forecast or try and predict some event or some actions that are happening? And you need to figure out what's the way to do that. What's the coding mechanism you use? What's the design? Again, machine learning is a way in which you can do this. What if you needed to find some data that seems like it looks similar to another repository or another group of values, or you maybe need to cluster something together? Again, machine learning is the answer there. Well, what if you wanted to do something like how Google does or how Bing does? Whenever you go in and you do a search and then you see back, you get back a set of responses, and those responses seem to be ranked in some order. Well, again, machine learning. Or maybe you want to sit back and you woke up from a good night's sleep and you had this great dream of this next great product and you didn't know exactly where to start, but you have all these weird devices laying around your house and your wife is telling you to clean the mess up and you want to just come up with this innovative idea. Again, you would use machine learning to be able to put all these different pieces together. So all of that being said, I'm sure all of you have been hearing about the IoT, Internet of Things, which is this concept of devices that are all around the house. For example, if you take a look at the slide here in the picture, you can see that IoT, or Internet of Things, could easily be anything from a TV to a VCR player to a CD player to an Xbox gaming system to the lighting system to the thermostat to the refrigerator, all of these different mechanical devices that are around your house or around in the office. They all have the potential to have some data. Maybe that data is based off of events, such as a time, running. Maybe that data is based off of temperature gauge. Maybe it's based off of sounds. It doesn't matter. There's data either coming from the device or going into the device. So if that being the case, what do you do with all of this data? So we have data in many buckloads coming from every which direction, and we need to make sure that we can do something with it, because data that just sits around and collects dust doesn't help us. Devices that sit around and collect dust doesn't help us. As a matter of fact, it gets us into fights. So we need to make proper use of this data. So one way in which we can do that is utilizing machine learning. Machine learning allows you to figure out ways in which you can classify information. You can group information. You can learn things about the data that you never even thought was possible. So what exactly is machine learning? Well, I'll tell you what it's not. It's not a robot going to school and getting a diploma. What it actually is a set of mathematical algorithms that are applied to data. And they're applied to old data and sometimes applied to made up data. And all of this data that has these mathematical algorithms applied to it give us some result or give us some answer. Now, there are certain level of steps or processes that we go to apply these mathematical algorithms to the data. And those steps are, first thing we want to do is gather the data. So you have devices laying around the house, you have things laying around the house, applications from everywhere. You need to figure out a way to store and gather that data. Then once you get that data, there's typically an abstraction or a generalization process where you start to look at the data from a 10-foot pole and you ask yourself, now what is this data really telling me? And then you realize, oh, I might be missing some values. And so you want to go into that data and you want to clean it up a little bit. And you want to make sure that the information that you have, whatever it's, wherever it is, wherever it's stored, that it's going to represent the device or the entity it is that you've collected that data from. So the next step that we do in the whole machine learning generic process is we take the clean data and the massaged data and we send it through the mathematical algorithm. The mathematical algorithm then starts to learn different coefficients, and it starts to take these different mathematical algebraic statements and figures out what's the best number or group of numbers to use in order to mimic that same data. So at the end of the training process, it's what we refer to as a model is built. Once that model is built, we then test it against some unknown data or unobserved data. And once it's tested against the unobserved data, then we can verify if the model we built actually matches what it is that we're trying to solve. Now, that's the most generic approach about machine learning, but there's many more approaches that we can use. For example, we have this generic approach called the lazy learner approach. The lazy learner approach is this idea where I'm not really going to do all of the steps that we just talked about. I'm going to skip some of the steps. I definitely need to gather the data, but I'm not going to generalize and abstract the data. I'm not really going to do anything that fancy. I may clean the data a little bit, but what I want to do really is just take the data and try and group it as best I can. Or in this case, one algorithm that utilizes this lazy learner approach is called the K-nearest neighbor and the KNN algorithm. The KNN algorithm is a fancy term of basically trying to figure out, once we have this data, be it an Excel spreadsheet or a database of tables and columns, once we have the data, what we could do is we can take a look at the information and figure out which one of the columns of values in this data seem like they look alike or they match similar features. Typically, when we talk about machine learning and we talk about these various different algorithms, we have to talk about this concept of nominal features versus ordinal features. Nominal features are simply string values. A string value is letter, characters, words that we read and understand, in our languages that we speak. Ordinal values are typically counted. They're typically numbers. So when you think about the data, you have to think about the data types that's in that data. So when we talk about the nearest neighbor algorithm, it works best with these nominal features, not ordinal features. So to put it in a nutshell, it works best with categories as opposed to numeric values. So one example of how we use the lazy learner approach or the nearest neighbor algorithm is, take for example, the idea of a tomato. Now for years, you know, I've been taught that a tomato was a vegetable. So, you know, you have this debate, no, it's not, it's a fruit. So I said to myself, okay, well, how do the scientists actually categorize, and there goes that category again, nominal features, how do we categorize the tomato? Well, one way you can do that is by coming up with a grid or an Excel spreadsheet or a list of data that outlines the characteristics of a fruit versus the characteristics of a vegetable. So one thing might be is, on a range of 1 to 10, what is the sweetness level of a vegetable? On a range of 1 to 10, what is the crunchiness of a vegetable? On a range of 1 to 10, what is the bitterness of a vegetable? And as you put these different features of data together and you start to rate individual fruits versus individual vegetables, you could start to realize there's a pattern that starts to develop. With the nearest neighbor algorithm, the idea is to take the data that you have and pretty much display it on a coordinate plane, like an X and Y coordinate plane, as if you were plotting dots on a graph. And then as the dots get spread out, you'll realize certain dots seem to lump together. You know, birds of a feather fly together, that age-old statement. Well, it's the same concept. When you start to take that fruit analogy, the tomato, and you start to look at the crunchiness, the sweetness, the bitterness of the fruit or vegetable itself, you realize that the tomato may lean more toward the fruit from the nearest algorithm as opposed to leaning more toward the vegetable. The next thing we want to talk about is probabilistic learning approaches. This is an algorithm or a design that is based totally off of probabilities. And you've heard it before when you hear about the weatherman on the news channel talking about the 70% chance of rain. Well, I'll tell you a funny story. So this past weekend, I was in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And, you know, it was kind of funny because my colleagues were telling me, hey, you're about to get two feet of snow. And I looked and I said, 2 feet of snow in this weather, what are the chances of that? Well, apparently I wasn't paying attention to the almanac Northern Weatherman, because we sure did get about a foot and a half of snow. Now that's crazy. So what does that mean, 70% chance of rain? 70% chance of rain means that I have collected a boatload of data, spreadsheets, databases coming from all over the place, and I took a look at a particular area, and I said, over the last 10 years, there was X amount of precipitation, there was the barometer pressure of this, there was the sunlight of this, there was the UV index of this, and I took a look at all of these characteristics of the weather, and I took a look at one important one. Did it rain 10 years ago on this date? And what I did was, is I added them all up. Every day on this date for the past 10 years in this area, what happened? And if 7 out of 10 of those times it rained, then guess what? I'm going to tell you that there's a 70% chance of rain today. And that's the idea of probabilistic learning. You take a bunch of probabilities, you add them up, you divide them up, you multiply a couple of things, and you get a percentage. And that percentage winds up describing a certain form of uncertainty. And the opposite of that is true. If there's a 70% chance of rain, the hidden piece of that is that there's a 30% chance it's not going to rain. So that's a very important thing to understand, that it's a either or type of mechanism. So another thing we use with probabilistic learning is spam filtering. So you'll see that all the time with either, you know, your email or the latest thing, cell phone spam messages that come back and forth. So you need some type of algorithm to figure out what's the probability that the words in a particular email is spam. Again, we use machine learning to figure that out. Another type of approach that we have is decision trees and rules. Decision trees are exactly what they sound like. They are logical if and else decision trees that the system or the engine has to make. If this is true, then move on to the next action. It allows you to do what we refer to as run through a separate and divide, or divide and conquer design. If you've ever did any type of binary searching, it's very similar to the algorithms with binary searching, right? It's this concept of we take some data, we divide on it at a particular feature or at a particular column, and then we look at that divided data and do it again until we build a rule. The problem with decision trees is that as you build these if conditions, if something is true, then do the next step, you can easily take the model that you've built off of reading your data and you can overfit it. This idea of overfitting is this example of, let's say I'm trying to do a credit scoring app, or even worse, a medical diagnosis app, and I want to diagnose if a person, let's say a female, is going to wind up with breast cancer. Well, I could take a look at all of the past patients who have been diagnosed with breast cancer, take a look at their age, their weight, their eating habits, their exercise habits, their blood type, maybe even their race even. That would be an important factor. And I would read in all of this data. And then based off of how many of these patients actually had breast cancer, I could come up with a set of rules. Well, if they're 65 and they don't exercise and they smoke and they, you know, do this, that, and the other, then they have a certain percent chance of actually being diagnosed with breast cancer. Well, the problem is that sometimes those rules can get very specific, and if they become too specific, you may miss out on some solutions. The next two we have are regression models and neural networks. Regression models are a way for taking numeric data, unlike some of the other ones that do best on nominal features and categories. This one takes a better approach at looking at numeric data. So whenever you hear a regression model, we're talking about numbers, decimals, integers, something you can count. And the idea of regression models is that they allow you to take the data and just kind of spread it out on a chart. And as you look at that data on the chart, you can kind of see a pattern start to develop. So as this pattern starts to develop, you can kind of predict by following the pattern what's going to happen next or what happened 100 years ago if you didn't have the data. Last but not least, as far as these different approaches that we have the neural network. This is another approach to machine learning, and it's based on your brain. Hence the term neural network. Well, how does your brain work? Well, your brain has different neurons inside of your brain cells, and the neurons have a bunch of inputs and outputs. And they send electrical pulses, multiple electrical pulses through various different inputs and various different outputs. And the idea is that the actual neuron itself does some work. Well, that's the same design of the neural network machine learning approach. You have a bunch of, you can have one or more inputs, and you can have one or more output, and you can connect them up together. And they like to look at the neural network as this black box, because the things that happen inside of the network itself, a lot of times is very difficult to interpret and explain. The good thing about neural networks is that they can pretty much model anything. They can use nominal features, they can use ordinal features, and they can pretty much model the most complex type of questions that you're trying to ask. The problem with neural networks, they're very, very complex. And again, if you ever need it, for example, if we go back for a second to the decision trees, one of the main differences here, with decision trees, you can actually see the trees. You can actually see the if and else logic that's being applied when you build a machine learning with decision trees. Whereas with neural networks, you can't. So if you needed to build a loan application, and the loan application needed to be very specific about why a client was not approved for a particular loan or denied for a loan, you wouldn't have the auditing capability of seeing that with neural networks as you would with decision trees. So as a developer, we talked all about the generic idea of these different approaches to machine learning. How do you implement that in code? Well, you pretty much have to be a data scientist or have a PhD in math if you wanted to do it from scratch, but it's not impossible. You can use implementations in C++, Python, Ruby, .NET. And if you want to use .NET, there's a cool library out there from Heaton Research called NCOG. And you can utilize, they have some classes available for being able to use neural networks and use some of the other algorithms that we talked about. We can also use a programming language such as R. So let me bounce into a demo here showing you what you might decide to do with the R programming language. So first thing I have here is something called RStudio. RStudio is a integrated development environment for allowing R statisticians and mathematicians and developers and hobbyists to build basically R script. It's a scripting language, dynamic scripting language, and it allows you to apply all of these fancy mathematical algorithms to a set of data. The coolest thing about R is that everything is kind of like treated like a vector. Everything is treated like a table or a matrix. So you don't really have to worry about how data gets in and out of the system. All you have to worry about really is just the mathematical algorithms that you'd like to focus on. So let me see if I can give you an example of getting data. So I have a Excel file, quite a few different Excel files. And let's go to the location where I store these Excel files. So here I have a SMS spam message. I have a mushroom file. Let's do the credit file. That's the easiest one to understand. So let me open this up in Excel so you can just kind of see the data that we have here. And so with this Excel file, I have some what we refer to as features or columns of data. I have checking balance, I have months, loan duration, I have credit history, and so on and so forth. The way I can get this data into my R environment, it's simply by typing in a variable name. Let's call it credit info, and utilizing a method called the read.csv file. And here I could type in the name of that Excel file. This. And just like that, it loads all of that data inside of that self Excel file straight into this variable called credit info. I could see the structure of that credit info by typing in the words credit info, and I'm assuming this screen might be a little too small for you. So let's see if I can zoom in a little bit. Let's try it again. I'll zoom in a few more times here. Hopefully that makes the screen a lot better to read. Okay, so if I type in the STR, which stands for structure, I can see that immediately this is the information that the RStudio environment or the R language is going to infer from that file. So here, the first thing I can infer here is that it's recognize 1,000 observations. Basically, there are 1,000 records inside the file, and there's 17 variables, or another way of saying it is that there's 17 columns. And within these 17 columns, it goes out and drills into more of the columns down here, and they tell me that out of one of the columns, there's a checking balance column that is a set of factors. It's a set of levels, I should say, which is a level is like a nominal feature, which says it's like a mixture, it's characters really. So it's a mixture of text and a mixture of numbers. Notice here it says that the credit, the month's loan duration is an integer, it defers that, and so on and so forth. I can further come down here and type in a summary of this credit info to read information about that data. And so when I do the summary is going to tell me things such as, this might be a little hard to read and understand here, but it tells me things like I can give you out of each column or each category of information, I can give you what's the smallest value, what's the mid-quarter, what's the quarter value, the first quarter value, the median versus the mean, and I can give you, of course, the max value for each column of data in that Excel spreadsheet. I could even tell you in the case of if I have a phone record, how many people have phones, how many people don't have phones listed, how many people defaulted on a loan, and so on and so forth. All of this is straight from just reading the information from that Excel file. Another thing that I can do here is R is also good with plotting information and just kind of displaying the information out onto a screen. So let's say I wanted to see how many people, a histogram of how many people defaulted on the loan. I can come over here and use the histogram function and go credit info, $default, and $ just simply means I want to get that particular column of information or that feature and display it as a histogram. Uh-oh, what did I do there? I messed something up there. The histogram requires numeric numbers, and in this case, default is a yes and no value. So let's try another one that actually has numeric values here. So let's do the amount. So let's go credit info $amounts. And immediately when I do that, as you see over here, I can see a quick graph of that information. So all of this is good, right? So the R programming language, okay, it's open source. You can go in, you can actually read the libraries and read the data that's going. So if you are a .NET developer, the next question you may be asking yourself, well, how do I get this functionality into my .NET app? Well, again, you can write it from raw scratch. You could take a look at the open source code. You can use the ncog. Or, introducing mammals. Oh, wait, not those mammals. This mammal, Microsoft Azure Machine Learning. So, Microsoft Azure Machine Learning is both an environment, a testing ground, a development lab, and machine learning engine. Or machine learning cluster, where you have the ability of taking your data, uploading your data, running it through various different algorithms, and using these algorithms inside of your .NET or Windows Store applications. Microsoft Azure Machine Learning allows you to test and build different models, utilizing the different machine learning approaches. It allows you to upload data from Excel files. It allows you to take in data from SQL blob stores, from web services, from tab separated value files. You can apply the machine learning approach or generic process, which is, again, you can gather the data, you can clean and massage the data, you can abstract and generalize and look at the data, visualize the data, you can then split your data up so you can have parts that are set for training the model and parts that are set for testing the model. You can actually build the model itself, and you can interact with it in such a way where you can interact with other Azure offerings, such as Event Hub and app services, to either take the output and visualize the output, or take an input from an Event Hub that stores it to a blob that gets it into Microsoft Azure Machine Learning. So all of that you can do with MAML. So let's take you to a quick example there. So here I have loaded up the Microsoft Azure Machine Learning website, and this website can be found at studio.azureml.net. And when you sign in with your Windows Live account, it allows you to create experiments, which wind up being like the environment and the like a workflow to allow you to implement whatever application or functionality that you want. So let me show you the experiment. So the first thing you would do is you would come over here and go new experiment, and you can create a blank experiment. And when you start off with this blank experiment, you start off with like this graphical grid of how your experiment may wind up looking. So first thing you need to do is figure out how you're going to get your data in here. So one thing you could do is you can add new data by clicking on a new data set, and you can add a data set from a file, or again, you could add it from a SQL blob storage or a web service, and on and on and on. So here you can say browse, and let's say I wanted to add in, let's say our credit information. So when you add in that credit file, and by the way, the Azure Machine Learning also comes with a bunch of other test samples that you can use as well. If you look up the tutorials, it shows you how to step through each and every one of those examples. And as that data gets uploaded, over here in the My Dataset under Save Datasets, you will see that credit file. So now you could drag that credit file over here. And once that credit file is in your environment, you could then interact with it and visualize the data. So if you click on the little node here, it allows you to right-click on it and visualize that Excel information. And it gives you a nice little charted graph of how the data is spread out throughout your system. Now, what might you want to do with this? Well, again, just depends on the machine learning approach that you want to interact with. But maybe what you want to do is maybe you want to remove some of the columns. Maybe you don't like all the data that's there. Right? So maybe you want to filter out some of the information. There are filters that you can use. There are data transformations that you can use. It's all graphical at this point. But let's say you went down the path of starting to write a bunch of R code, and you wanted to figure out, well, is there a way, because R is a really easy language for me to work with, and I can, you know, remove columns and add columns and do all kind of cool things with it. Can I get like that graphing capability of R? Well, the answer is yes, you can. And the way in which you do that is Azure Machine Learning comes with an R language module. And the R language module allows you to actually execute R scripts. So here, you can connect the dots. You can say, I want to take the Excel information that I just uploaded, and I want to run it through R. Well, you use the execute R script, and you have the ability of now reading that credit information, and literally this is nothing more than an R script right here in this little window. And you could type everything that you want to do. So if I want to see the structure of R and print it out, I could do something like this. Let's say I'm not going to use this data set 2 here for a second. And let's say I'm not going to use this guy, and let's say I'm not plotting anything right now. And let's say the output I want to return is the credit data frame. And if I wanted to show the summary of it, I could just go summary credit, and then I could test it. So at this point, I'll save it, and I'll run it. And if everything is good, it will read in the data from that CSV file, run my R script, and if I click on the output here, I could see the R device information, which basically is the output log. And if I, what did I do here? Let me view my output. My output log is going to basically be my command window that I had, just like if I were to use R itself. So here you notice it's the same type of data. It gives me the observations. If you can see that, make it a little bit bigger for you. Sorry about that. You can see my observations here. You can see the fact that I have 17 columns and 100 records and the data types it infers from that. All right, so this is all introductory stuff. So this is all great and dandy. So with all of this, how does this interact with the Connect device? Well, the Connect device is one of those devices that is going to be in your home, in your entertainment system, if you have an Xbox One. And this device has 4 sensors. It has a sensor for detecting color, like an HD web camera. So that means you can get the red, green, and blue and alpha numbers that come from the camera. The device itself does 30 frames per second. So imagine you get red, green, and blue and alpha numeric intensity values at 30 frames per second. That's a lot of data. But not only do you get color, you get infrared. Infrared is a number that goes from 0 to 65,000, basically, and it gives you the intensity of how much infrared data is coming back from where you are. From that infrared, they actually run a little mini machine learning algorithm on the device itself that gives you depth, that gives you how far in feet are you from the device. The Kinect also has a microphone, so that means you can listen for sound waves that come in and out through the device. And all of this generates, again, a lot of data. So let me give you examples of what you might do with the Kinect. So here's a simple example. This is utilizing an app that I wrote called Kinect Measurement. Now hopefully this will kick in. So as I stand in front of the device, okay, maybe not. Let's try that again. Okay, as I stand in front of the device or sit in front of the device, it recognizes how far I am depth-wise from the device. So again, that's at 30 frames per second. Let's see if I can give you another example of the Kinect. Here's another application called Kinect Evolution. And if I connect back up, let's see here. If I connect back up and it's not detecting my sensor, isn't this great? Okay, well, that demo was not a great one. Let's try it one more time. All right, so we're going to try and connect the device back up again. Okay. In any case, if I pull up the app, for some reason my device is not being detected at this point, it gives us different feeds and just kind of just shows you the different feeds that could come from that device. We have a depth cloud or a 3D cloud that we have, a point cloud as we like to refer to it, of me sitting at a table. We have the audio coming in from the device. We can have body joints and block man information and depth color coming from the device. All of that data, again, generates a lot of information. So with all that being said, how does the face interact with this information? Well, one of the feeds of data that comes from the device itself is Kinect Face. Kinect Face is a 2D representation of the Kinect of a person's face. It's the X and Y coordinates. That the way that information is calculated is it uses, again, machine learning to determine where the region of a person's face is, and then it sends that data 30 frames per second back into your application. Another type of feed that we have is the Kinect HD Face. The Kinect HD Face, HD stands for high definition, is the same face that we had in 2D, but now in three dimensions, meaning that we can get the X, Y, and Z coordinates, and for those that are into the vector math and stuff, the W coordinates, if you will, if you are worried about things of that nature. And from that particular perspective, you get 1,347 some odd points. So points being the vertices that are on a person's face. So now you might be seeing a clearer picture as to how this may all fit together. So if we get a lot of data coming from the Connect application, and let me show you what that data might look like. So here I have two different forms of data coming in from the Connect. I have one here called the HD FacePoint data and another here called the HD Animation Units, which are all different feeds of data that come from that device. And this is an Excel spreadsheet again that I've built when running the application. And that application then spits back information that allows me to interact with a person's face. So the first piece of information here are the 1300 some odd points. So here we have X, Y, and Z coordinates of that data. We have infrared or depth coordinates of that data that we can do to run it through machine learning in order to determine if a person is moving their left lip up or their inner eyebrow down, their left inner eyebrow down. And we can pay attention to this data and interact with it by running it through the various different machine learning algorithms. Another form of data that we have here are the animation units. The animation units allow us to realize data that's coming from the device when a person's sitting in the front of it that allows us to do, you know, check and see if their jaw is open, if their jaw has slid right, if their lips have stretched out. Again, a bunch of data. So let's see if we can do something with this information here inside of Azure Machine Learning. So I have a script that I can use here, and I'll explain the script as I run through it. And I'm just going to copy the script inside of the Azure Machine Learning tool. And let's go back to the Azure Studio here. And inside the Azure Studio, what you've noticed here is I've already loaded up the animated units CSV file inside of the Azure Machine Learning Studio environment. And you can see it's pretty similar to the same data that I collected earlier, right? We have the lip stretch and lip right and jaw slide right and so on and so forth. And what I want to do here is I want to run some R script that reads that data and tries to interact with that data in some form or fashion. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to read that information into a variable. I'm just going to print out the structure of that variable. And then just showing you some other things that you can do. If I only wanted to read the first column of that data, this is one way I could do it, just interacting with the first index. If I wanted to only display the everything except the last column, I could remove the last column of that information. Let's say some of the data wasn't quite right, and I maybe needed to normalize it. I maybe needed to, you know, make sure that if the data was like between the numbers of 5 and 1500, and I wanted to normalize it to make sure every piece or ounce of data is based off of percentage or is based off of a number from 0 to 1, I could normalize it by utilizing a function such as this and then interacting with that function on that data. And then at that point, maybe I wanted to see something with the jaw open, and I wanted to figure out if there's some type of correspondence between when a person opens their jaw or when their jaw slides to the right. Well, I can plot that graph out and actually see that information here. And then maybe once I've done that, maybe I need a cross table to figure out, okay, well, I see that there are a bunch of features that seem to relate, but I can't quite get my handle on it. I could use a cross table to kind of see the percentages of what's happening between two or more features inside of my list. And then if I wanted to use the nearest neighbor algorithm to actually determine out of all of these features which ones are closest to each other and grouped together and which ones are not, I can use the nearest neighbor algorithm. Now, the nearest neighbor, the K nearest neighbor algorithm, can be found inside of the class package. So by default, you could check to see which packages are deployed and installed upon Azure Machine Learning, or you can just try and install it yourself by using the install packages. Let me scroll up and show you how you might install packages. You would run the install packages, type in class, and that will install the class package. And then once that package is installed, you type in library and the package you just installed, and that will then go ahead and make that package available in your session. All right, so let's see what happens when we run this example. So this example, again, is just trying to determine, out of all the features, which features, when I made my facial expression, which features are grouped together? Which ones are, you know, give the similar values as if I'm moving or I'm working together? And which one of the features are just totally off and they have nothing to do with one another? That's kind of the idea of what I've done at this particular point. So once this script finished running, I could then go in and visualize that data and see what actually happened. So here, if I click on visualize, I can see the histogram of my jaw that was open when I took snapshots of my face with the device. I could take a look at, we'll talk about that block plot. We'll take a look at the scatter plot that I have of the jaw that was open versus the jaw sliding to the right and how they correspond to each other. And if I have a bunch of other fields, I could take a look at the whole thing from a high level view, in this case of just plotting the whole data set or the data frame if I wanted to plot the whole thing. And then by looking at the graphs, I can kind of infer information. So with all of that being said, as a developer, you may be wondering, wow, that's a lot to take in. There's graphs, there's data, there's, you know, all kind of results that I can see. How do I put all of this together? Well, if you have Kinect devices, basically you can start running your Kinect devices, saving your data to an Excel spreadsheet, and then you can use that Excel spreadsheet inside of Azure Machine Learning, and you can use R to draw out the script, and then you can run it straight inside of Azure Machine Learning. You can also use Internet of Things devices that take in the data. The whole point of that then is, how do you connect that data? In the case of Kinect, you can connect up because Kinect provides a software developer kit. In the case of a stove, or in the case of a toaster, you're going to have to figure out how to connect up. Now, under connectivity, we also have event hubs and service bus, which are other Azure offerings that you can use to send the data up. Now, once that data is connected from the device and sent up, you need a place to store it. So you're going to use SQL databases, blob storage, CSV files, DocDBs. All of those are available that you can use inside of as an Azure offering as well. And then once you have the data stored, then here comes the funny fun part, analyzing it and running it through Azure Machine Learning. But Azure Machine Learning is not the only analytics. You can use Stream Analytics, you can use HD Insight, you can use Data Factory. All of these are, again, Azure offerings that allow you to take the data, cube it up, slice it up, graph it up, and do what you need to do. And last but not least, once you have it, once you've analyzed it, reported on it, and figured out the algorithm that you want to use, the last piece of it is using the presentation tier. How do you display it? How do you actually incorporate it into your application? So one of the last things that I didn't make mention of with Azure Machine Learning is that once you've figured out the model and it fits what it is that you're trying to do, you could turn it into a web service and then use that inside your application to make calls to the model so it can always generate the output out that you're looking to generate. So as a recap, well, 5 reasons to use machine learning. If you ever needed to recognize data, machine learning is the way to do it. If you ever needed to predict actions and events, machine learning. If you ever needed to cluster or group data together, machine learning. If you ever wanted to apply ranking, machine learning. If you had that crazy innovative idea, machine learning. And the best part of this all, if you use a device like the Kinect that's going to generate a lot of data, especially like the face data, you could do things like recognizing if a person is frowning or smiling or so on and so forth. So what's your call to action? What you need to do is go to studio.azuremachinelearning.net, register and start playing, take a look at some of the Windows 10 drivers and devices for working with Internet of Things. Go to connectforwindows.com. If you want to have any more questions or concerns, go to dgoings.wordpress.com. And you can also find more information at nimble.com. And here, I'll leave the references up. If you guys have any questions, I'll go ahead and give you guys time to ask some questions.
Hi, Dwight. We have some questions for you. First one is, can this functionality be adapted easily to create an adapting volume control? Example, someone sitting on the couch and watching a movie. Sensor will collect data of where the person is, and as the person moves to the right, the volume on the right will lower, and while the volume on the left increase by creating an ambient and same level volume anywhere. So it will be appropriate for creating an adaptive volume control?
Yes. I'm not sure if you even have to go the depth of using the full-fledged Azure machine learning. You could just do that with just connectivity with the Kinect device. Because the Kinect gives you depth, you can easily read how far a person is from, let's say, the TV itself. Or if you wanted to get even more complex or complicated, you can have a device that monitors the whole room state. And utilizing machine learning, it could recognize the TV is on the wall and a person is sitting on a couch, and then utilizing machine learning, it can do exactly what you mentioned. As a person moves forward, they can, you know, they could turn the volume down, or if they move back, it could turn the volume up. So yes, that is a usage scenario that you can apply here.
Thank you. Then another question, it comes out when you was showcasing your R demo. Can these errors in task with ERG? Can you find error in task with ERG? So check for loops in parent-child relationship in a workflow tool before loading data into a software?
I'm not sure I follow that question there.
Well, it was asking if it's possible to find errors with an hierarchy of errors, I suppose.
Oh, so with machine learning, everything is really based off of the errors, root mean squared errors, and so on and so forth. But I guess the question is can you apply this principle to understanding and learning more about errors that are coming from your device or your application? And if that is the question, the answer is yes. You can take this in any approach that you want in order to determine, based off of, you know, any type of relational design or anything, can errors, you know, can you find more probabilities or statistics based off of errors that may be occurring from, you know, various different scenarios. So yes, you could use it in that aspect.
Dwight, I hate to interrupt, but we do. We're getting close on time here, and it's time for us to open up some polls. So, ladies and gentlemen, this time, if you're to the left-hand viewing area of your screen, we'll have some polls up on the screen. And Dwight, any closing comments as I go through the polls here?
I'd just like to thank everybody for showing up, and if we have more questions, you can feel free to reach me at my blog there that you see on the link.
Great, thank you. Also, ladies and gentlemen, if you click on the message tab on the bottom of your screen, you will see a survey URL. We'd appreciate your feedback. And thank you, Dwight.
Thank you. John, any more questions there?
Yes, we have a couple. I don't know if we have time for it. Esther, can we go on other question?
We have about 2 more minutes.
Okay. So another question would be, can machine learning be integrated with SharePoint?
Yes, it sure can.
And then something else, can you recommend some tutorials about Ncog? And congratulations for your presentation.
Oh, thank you. So heatonresearch.com/ncog is, again, a .NET. There are many implementations there. You can find a C++, Java, .NET implementation. And if you go to that site, it gives you some great tutorials. There's also a book by Heaton himself that talks about neural networks. And in that book, there are some great examples on how to use NCOG as well.
And then the last one from Peter Liu is, do you have a sample of making an ML model to web service?
Yes, I will post some samples up online that you can utilize after the presentation here.
And the other one, the last one that comes just now is, can this integrate with K2 Black Pearl workflow engine?
So I'm assuming that's in line with the SharePoint question. So yes, so the idea here is that think of Azure Machine Learning as an engine that you could play and test around with and also create models to report off of and predict and classify. It allows you to expose it as a web service, and any application that can call a web service can utilize this mechanism. So that includes SharePoint through web parts and workflows, as well as K2 if it has a web service mechanism. Yeah.
But if there is not a connector, it should be developed custom for the stuff, so it will be possible.
Yes.
And that's it. There is no more question.
Okay, well, thank you, everybody. Hopefully you enjoyed this session and you learned a little bit about Azure Machine Learning, Connect for Windows, and how to use the two together to detect facial expressions.